From an undisclosed location in the Nevada desert, this is Jennifer Morency of WTF Radio. Welcome to Open Mic Night at the Cormorant Cafe, with your Master of Ceremonies and Master of Debates, Rob. My teddy bears were stolen by a...
Okay, testing. Okay, this thing's not working. What time is it? 7 o'clock? I guess I'm early. I'm gonna go... No, I don't know what I'm gonna do. Where the hell's Jill? Where the hell's Morency? Turn the light on. Okay, let me see. Hello? Is this thing... Did we plug it in? Where's... Hello? Hello? Alright, well, I guess... I don't know. I just assumed the coffee shop was open all day and that I was running a thing in the evening, but I guess it simply doesn't exist unless I come. How interesting. Alright, so I'm Rob. This is the Cormorant Cafe. Jill is over there being a barista, handing out Narcotics Anonymous style coffee. That's right, I said it. That's right. Up your game, people. Up your game. We need to get a new supplier for our coffee, I think. I also think we should stop burning it. Can't blame the barista. She's more like administering it through the machine. Or if I buy the wrong coffee, it's not her fault. All right, let me see what else. You got your 25 cents. You got your quarters to buy your peanut butter and jelly quarters. Maybe that makes the coffee taste better. All right, let me see. So tonight, Morency has something. I threw a curveball and requested some extra stuff instead of just waiting around for her to give me extra stuff. So of course she was like, no. Anyway, because we're going to have on Sunday a bonus Valentine's episode. I guess I say it out loud. I'm committed. All right, so tonight I'm going to read something from Kris Kristofferson. Let's just hope that badass has a sense of humor about dweebs borrowing, air quotes, borrowing his stuff. I'm going to read something from Kris Kristofferson. I'm going to read a short thing I wrote about an angel. And for people who don't like metaphors, it's about me, you dickhead. And let me see. Oh, I'm going to read chapter 4, I think, of Macmillan the Magician. But I'm not going to give you the disclaimer about, you know, you have to listen to episodes 9 and 10. This one's just a kid telling a story by a campfire, I think. So we should be safe, and I don't have to give you all the backstory. But you really should listen to 9 and 10, especially 9. See if you even care about Merlin. I guess today we find out why he's called Macmillan. All right. So... We'll see. Time. Me. Did I say I'm Rob? I'm Rob. And this place is Cormorant Cafe. And yeah. I'll be back in a few seconds. Enjoy the dumb ad. Okay, this may be complicated for me to do because it's a song from Kris Kristofferson, and I'm not going to sing it because I would screw it up, and anyway, I would need a lot more equipment just to keep tempo. And I really, really don't want to screw it up. I just listened to it a little bit ago so that I could rearrange and make notes on the lyrics. And anyway, my voice is too high-pitched. If I were to sing it, I would rush the tempo almost instantaneously. This is called Sunday Morning Coming Down. It's by Kris Kristofferson. You can find it on something called The Essential Kris Kristofferson. Sunday Morning Coming Down by Kris Kristofferson. He has writing credit everywhere I looked, so Chris, this one's for you. Well, I woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head that didn't hurt, and the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had one more for dessert. Then I fumbled through my closet for my clothes and found my cleanest dirty shirt, and I shaved my face and combed my hair, and stumbled down the stairs to meet the day. I'd smoked my brain the night before with cigarettes and songs that I'd been a-pickin', but I lit my first and watched a small kid cussin' at a can that he was kicking. Then I crossed the empty street and caught the Sunday smell of someone frying chicken. I'm almost singing it because of the rhyme. And it took me back to something that I lost somewhere, somehow, along the way. And then the chorus is this. On a Sunday morning sidewalk, wishing the Lord that I was stoned, 'cause there's something in a Sunday makes a body feel alone. And there's nothing short of dying half as lonesome as the sound on the sleeping city sidewalks, Sunday morning coming down. Okay, forgive me, but I can't really see that without singing it, because he sings it a couple times when he sings a song. In the park, I saw Daddy with a laughing little girl who he was swinging. And I stopped beside a Sunday school and listened to a song that they were singing. Then I headed back for home, and somewhere far away a lonely bell was ringing. And it echoed through the canyons like the disappearing dreams of yesterday. And then he does another version of the chorus. On a Sunday morning sidewalk, wishing Lord that I was stoned, 'cause there's something in a Sunday makes a body feel alone. And there's nothing short of dying half as lonesome as the sound on the sleeping city sidewalks, Sunday morning coming down. Then there's doo 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 dee doo dee doo doo for a few seconds, and then it ends. Thank you. Okay, actually, I'm not sure we're going to have anything from Morency, from Jennifer in the desert today, because she's not feeling very well, and she's very busy trying to find a doctor in a plague. So, I don't know, you guys. I'm going to put her donation link in show notes either way. I think of her as my unofficial co-host anyway, but I kind of worry about that girl. Anyway, I guess in view of a WTF episode, I will read some short little thing I wrote, and I'll do that right now. kind of worried about you, Jennifer. Feel better. I honestly don't know if she listens to the podcast. Oh no, she must. Because she mentioned the firing of Jill's predecessor. Look, just because you guys have the same first name doesn't mean that I think that you're going to steal things. Alright, so the thing I'm going to read is called Dooslick Chill of Morn by me. The angel stretched, more a man or even a dog than a celestial being. Fists up, elbows out, up on his toes, his back arched as a bird, wings open, extended, drying in the sun. Dew, its glisten, and infinity of existence on an infinity of grass and an infinity of yards across the infinity of mornings, on the infinity of worlds, which have dew, grass, yards, mornings. Cold twas the air, later though, the overwarm afternoon would make this angel miss the wet, dew-slick chill of morn. That's all. Okay, so in the situation that we're in right now, let me see. So what I can do is say, for those of you who are interested in what's going on with the Macmillan story, that is to say people who have been listening to episodes 9 and 10 and are now listening to this episode, that's pretty much what I'm going to do next, is read chapter 4, which, I mean, I guess it's also set up as like a kid telling a campfire story, so maybe it can just be excerpted. I don't know. Ideally, it can be read on its own, I guess. But anyway, as far as stuff that's actually written down, there's that, and I think there's one more chunk after that, and then I have to write. So it's about a sixth. If you were to divide the length, it probably will be. You would figure out that the amount that's written is about 1/6 of the amount there will be. Anyway, for those of you not interested in Macmillan, other than that, I'm just going to basically thank you for being here, and I'm going to lament that we don't have a Morency WTF section because she isn't feeling well. I'm going to remind you that Sunday there will be a bonus Valentine episode. Please, the mic is open. Submit me some audio. Or even if you submit me something written for me to read, I'll read it. The better, the more, the better. So that's all. I'll probably say, I am reality's whore at the end. Okay. But otherwise, I'm going to read Macmillan chapter 4. And as far as I know, that's all that's left. And all the thank yous that I normally do. Enjoy! So, okay. Chapter 4, The Scotsman, or The Campfire Story. The supertitle on this chapter is, This Chapter Borrowed from a Certain Officer Evans. He won't miss it. It says the last part in parentheses. Part 1, The Neighbor, Johan. Hold on, I have to move the microphone. Okay. So, let's see, this is going to be like somebody's telling a campfire story. My grandfather told me this story, and he said it was an old family story. He said there had been an incredible light show the night before, meteor shower. One of the biggest, he said, most dramatic. But before I can talk about the stranger, I have to mention the neighbor. My ancestor had a farm, or, given it was here in Southern California and on the large side, I guess we'd call it a ranch. sorry. My ancestor and his wife lived on a ranch here, slightly north of modern-day Pasadena, here, down the mountain, in Altadena. Johann Huber, I believe was his name, the neighbor's name, although Granddad was clear he wasn't entirely sure. Something German, he said, Johann something. The name doesn't matter, nor the nationality either, I suppose, although making the villain German makes sense, given Grandpa's history, fighting in both wars, working with the tribunals and all that. So this Johann, the neighbor, had apparently been hiring bandits for months and months to steal from my ancestor's ranch. Perhaps he started slowly taking things directly, no one knows. Nothing of great value was taken, and it wasn't like my ancestor was at enormous disadvantage. Grandpa said, fleeced, slightly fleeced, that is. It doesn't kill the sheep to lose the wool. For whatever reason, my ancestor, and Grandpa never did tell me his name, came to suspect his neighbor, this Johann something or other, and decided to pay him a visit. He'd recently lost, in air quotes, a shovel. My ancestor was set to bury fence poles that day, a job made difficult by the lack of a shovel, and a delay of replacing it would set back the project another day. It turned out that he met the neighbor on his way somewhere between the two properties, the ranches, and this is italics, he had the shovel on him. Thus, my neighbor confronted this Johann and was struck with a shovel in the back and in the head. He lay on the ground, barely conscious, awaiting the killing blood. He lay on the ground, barely conscious, awaiting the killing blow. Grandpa says our ancestor was pretty badly beaten and may not have survived, such were his injuries. And he heard something not terribly far off. There was an exclamation from the neighbor. What the? And a newcomer, a tall man, a stranger, the stranger I've mentioned, came into my ancestor's blurry view. His neighbor dropped the shovel, pulled out a pistol, and shot two or three times. The interloper dropped to the ground, either from being wounded or to dodge being wounded. We aren't exactly sure. The neighbor put away his gun, picked up the shovel, and my ancestor's last memory was of being hit with a sharp end in the back, in the head, and in the neck. All right, that's the end of the first part. Chapter 4, Part 2, is called Awake. My ancestor didn't die, of course, at that time, because he had no children, and had he died, I wouldn't be here to tell his story. What happened, so I've been told, is that my ancestor awoke, apparently unharmed, with a man leaning over him and making quiet whistling noises. He recognized the man as the stranger that he thought he had seen shot. He, my ancestor, I'm told, gasped and jumped away, suspecting various things from hallucinations to ghosts to some kind of trick. The stranger was holding the shovel, and it was, so I've been told, a ghastly mess, covered with blood and brains. My ancestor assumed Johann had met a gruesome end. He attempted several times to communicate with the man who may have come in the nick of time and saved him, but got nowhere with that. Although he, so Granddad tells it, suspected the newcomer of being Scottish and took to calling him Macmillan, after an immigrant with whom he'd been acquainted when he himself moved to the United States a few years earlier from Denmark. My ancestor and this Scotland, the stranger, began walking back to his, my relative's ranch, and Granddad wasn't exactly clear on this either. The stranger somehow slipped away before they got there. My ancestor still had the shovel and began to question his own memory. He, so my grandfather says, wrote the details in a diary, but Grandpa tells me his own grandfather's father, his great-grandfather, lost it, or anyway, it was in his possession when it was last seen. So I can't prove any of this. It is, as I said before, just an old family legend. So my ancestor supposedly wrote the details down. The facts and his conjectures... He even, Grandpa said, wrote his various theories of his own imagination, or frankly, brain damage. everything about his suspicions of the neighbor, everything above, bandit, Scotsman, stranger, everything. Although when he wrote this down, I don't know, because when my ancestor arrived back at the ranch house, his wife and horses weren't there. The stable boy wasn't there. No one was there. My ancestor's wife had been a school teacher before they married, and she also kept a journal, a diary. My ancestor located it and learned that she'd waited up and he didn't return. She assumed at first that he'd located his tools and set about his fencing, the burying of fence posts and all that. He learned that 2 or 3 days had gone by and he didn't come home. She was getting worried, and she'd been actually threatened by this rogue, this neighbor, Johan, and had gone into town to inquire as to the whereabouts of her husband, my ancestor, and to inquire with the law to make a statement about the neighbor and report, if necessary, her husband as missing. So Johan wasn't dead, that's A, and B, a lot of time had passed between 10 days and 2 weeks, according to Grandpa, according to family legend, according to my ancestor's wife's diary. So my ancestor had gone to town, that's C, if you're counting. That's the end of part 2 of chapter 4. Okay, chapter 4, part 3 is called Indiana Colony. Moment here, rearrange. Alright, Indiana Colony, part 3. My ancestor wasn't bad off financially, and apparently had a stack of banknotes, cash, and took some with him and some water, and began to walk to town, a settlement, back then still known as Indiana Colony. He found a lawman who told him Johan could be found in the tavern, probably drunk. He'd arrived after dark. It was the middle of December, did I forget to mention? After my ancestor reported the events, bandits, shovel, murder, the threats reported in his wife's diary, all this, the lawman agreed to accompany him to the tavern to arrest the neighbor. Meanwhile, the sheriff or deputy or whatever, the lawman, informed my ancestor that his wife, the ancestor's wife, had been working for the bank as a clerk, and that it had been a week or so since she herself came and reported him, my ancestor, missing. In her own version of how the neighbor had treated her, her word against his, you know how it is, said the lawman, probably. But threats were one thing, attempted murder was another, and this stranger, this Scotsman. And if the stranger, the Scotsman, could be found, there'd be 2 counts. Things then were different. The lawman and my ancestor split up, though, and my ancestor headed to the small room over a tailor shop where his wife was staying. Apparently she'd rented the room and boarded the horses. His wife was apparently happy to see him and to return home. It was dark, again, December. They stayed one night in her small apartment, retrieving the horses and returning home the following day. My ancestor, or so I'm told, checked in with the law, and yes, Johan had been arrested and was, quote-unquote, sleeping it off in a jail cell. The ancestor and his wife would be summoned when it was time to give testimony, and if they could locate this other victim, all's the better. And that's the end of part 3. Okay, so chapter 4, part 4 is titled A Hero Takes a Fall. It wasn't 3 days later when there was... It wasn't 3 days later when there was a scratching at the door, and as my neighbor was home from his chores upon the ranch, he answered it and was surprised to see the stranger. Now, however, the man seemed to understand English and smiled and gave his name. He still had the accent my ancestors suspected before and actually called himself McMillan. The way Grandpa tells it, the ancestor was about to ask him his name again when he heard a distant bang, and the stranger suddenly fell against the door frame. That's an exclamation mark. When he heard a distant bang and the stranger suddenly fell against the door frame. My ancestor could see, although couldn't be seen by, his neighbor coming up the lane pointing a rifle at the house. There were 2 more shots, and my relative, scarcely having time to try to drag the stranger inside and close the door, carefully retrieved his pistol from its holster in a nook in the foyer, in the foyer where he had placed it after coming home for lunch or something like that. Anyway, he had a gun. The door itself was almost destroyed at this point, and the stranger wasn't moving, wasn't breathing. There was blood everywhere. My ancestor's wife emerged from within the house with another gun, a rifle, and she crouched in a shadow. And she crouched in a shadow opposite her husband and the bullet-riddled and bleeding body of the stranger. The neighbor was standing outside the door. Neither of my ancestors made any movement, any noise. Johann, so says Grandpa, shoved the remaining sticks that had once been the door and cleared them as though they were cobwebs. Upon entering, he shot the stranger again, and suddenly aware of my ancestor who'd cocked his pistol, turned on him and click, 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 click. He was out of ammunition, and somehow, for whatever reason, neither of my ancestors shot him dead then and there. By now, though, the stable boy returned, of course, and from his hiatus after my ancestor's disappearance and everything, came around the house, guns, plural, drawn. The neighbor put down his gun, and the stable boy came upon the scene. Thus, neighbor disarmed, hands up in surrender, what you'd expect. The wife rode quickly into town to retrieve a lawman while the two men secured, tied up the neighbor. She returned shortly with two deputies and a few other neighbors and colony people, the usual interested parties and whatever. They were told the neighbor had been released pending trial only hours before. That's the end of part four. Chapter 4, Part 5 is called Burial, with a question mark. Burial? Okay, so here we go. Oh, this is the last one. Okay, murder, invasion, and another count of attempted murder were added to Johann's growing list of court offenses, and he was taken away under guard. The stranger, whom no one from town recognized, less lucky, was dead. His arrival and murder had at least allowed my ancestor, if not his whole household, to survive. It was arranged to bury the man in a week if they couldn't find his next of kin or whatever, and so I'm told he was. The stranger was buried on Christmas Eve, 1885. For an unknown man new to the area, he had a good showing at his funeral and burial, and my ancestor, it is said, reported everything he knew in a kind of eulogy. He wrote about it later, and Grandpa says he reported he wept openly in his diary, the lost diary. Yes, yes. After this, every day, my ancestor and his wife returned to the grave. Daily, they walked up the hill, and finding what blossoming wildflowers were available back then, or perhaps not, this is a conjecture, returned to the burial site to ponder life's questions and thank the man who'd saved them in his small way. Oh, okay, guys, but he's dead, you assholes. All right, who saved them in his small way? About a week after New Year's Day, so reports my granddad, quoting this lost diary, they took their daily stroll, accompanied this time by a farmhand and a maid, and found the grave disturbed. The engraved stone, saying only hero, was itself buried under some of the dirt which had been used to bury their savior, this Scotsman, our stranger. There was a couple of long splintered sticks, nicely varnished, partially covered in a pile of freshly disturbed ground. Nearby was found a shoe buried along with a man, and this is even more weird, a large lizard skin. Granddad reports it was the size of a man. Following in the direction, disturbed burial site, shoe, lizard skin, they found the remains of the clothing the stranger had been wearing when they buried him, and large man-sized prints of a six-toed clawed thing. Later, reports the missing diary, says my grandfather, the skin couldn't be found, and he, the ancestor, lamented his actions in not retrieving it. I'm told they went about digging up the grave, the farmhand going off for shovels and returning with a with a stable boy and shovels suitable for the purpose. Yes, Tommy, apparently different shovels from those used to bury fence posts. What they found, of course, was an empty grave, but not just an empty grave. The box the stranger had been buried in was broken at the side, and the dirt had apparently collapsed straight into it. The lid was, I'm told, virtually intact inside the coffin. The mound, there's always a mound when something is buried, hadn't even settled. The mound, there's always a mound when something is buried, hadn't even been settled, I'm told, and the disturbed dirt was to the side. A cut along the edge of the grave between the disturbed ground and the undisturbed ground. They discovered, in case they didn't know, the sticks they'd found were from the side of the coffin itself. Someone or something had come and taken the stranger from the grave. They, those present, whoever, apparently decided the body was taken by resurrectionists, grave robbers who sell bodies to medical schools, and, as far as anyone knows, cleaned up the now empty grave, going so far as to return the stone hero. Oh, I see. I don't know why I wrote it that way. So they think that something came and got him, and then they redressed the empty grave and put the tombstone back. Later, according to the supposedly lost diary, my ancestor decided to return for the artifact he apparently thought was a molting from a giant lizard, but was unable to find it. If I'm to believe the story, the ancestor also wrote that he inquired of the maid, the stable boy, and the farmhand, and none of them remembered any animal skin or anything unusual other than the disturbed grave itself. Johann, the neighbor, was certainly found guilty of everything and disappeared from the story into the late 19th century prison system, whatever that may mean. Maybe he was hanged. But we've all heard stories of missing livestock, and we know about the reptilians who supposedly control the world governments. Could it be? Okay, who wants to tell the next ghost story? And that is the end of chapter 4, part 5, and the end of chapter 4. And then, just to give you a taste, chapter 5 tells this place is dangerous. And the super title is this what they do with their day? Alright, well, that has been Macmillan the Magician, chapter 4. Campfire story. I hope you liked it. Thank you for listening. Please, the mic is open. Please submit for a beating. Please submit your audio or writing so that I can use it, because we have a special Valentine episode and it's going to just be running around like always. Alright, mic is open. You see, McCormick Cafe. Don't forget to tip your barista, whose name is Jill, and buy a peanut butter quarter. Ciao. I am reality's whore!